last year. I spent a great deal of time at the state affairs. Being resident director, as you see the course, reporting the state affairs committee version. I have the original. You have affairs. Please understand. Yeah. Thanks for your time. He is a significant departure from the original bill. It's a watered down version. I thought it was still much worthy of your consideration. The intent of the bill was to give police officers in departments around the state of Alaska the same constitutional rights as are enjoyed by other citizens of Alaska. There were a number of portions that were objected to by the chiefs of police as being items more suitable for contract negotiation. All of those items, as far as I'm aware, have been removed by the State Affairs Committee from the bill. The items that are in the bill that you have before you, the State Affairs Committee substitute, deal primarily with the rights of an officer within the department that have been pared down. Rather than taking any more, I'd be happy to answer any questions, rather than taking more of your time, perhaps the other two individuals may be on behalf of the Officers Association could also provide some background on the bill.
Senator, we have opposition from both the Department of Administration and the Department of Public Safety. Department of Public Safety says a further objection lies in the original ones they have before. A further objection lies in infringement of this legislation in the area of employer-employee relations, thereby bypassing the collective bargaining process. Labor relations is a management function which includes internal investigations and central administrative concerns that need to be addressed through the management of the bargaining structure.
If I ask, Mr. Chairman, what's the end of the letter?
February 2nd, 1984.
Yes, most important department is able to provide you with the letters of our sponsor. I'm sure it was never signed that part. If the department, if there's someone from the department here that wishes to state their objections, the labor management items, in my opinion, have been removed from the bill by the previous committee. Perhaps the department's chair.
I think Mr. Cummings is here for labor relations.
Yes. I'll let the other folks say thank you, sir.
Thank you, Senator. John Stretko, identify yourself, sir, and give whatever testimony you need.
Thanks, sir. My name is John Walter Stretko. I'm the Sergeant of the Anchorage Police Department, Vice President of the Anchorage Police Department Police Association. I'm here primarily to talk from the police officer's point of view. I've been on business for 15 years. Prior to this bill, we have a contract right now that has most of these things in the Anchorage Police Department. Prior to that point, we've had several arbitrations based on violations of rights and contracts, even about 95%. That's because, in my opinion, that the administration has been doing the law. We give you a packet there, I think there's a copy of it. You'll see a letter from Judge Lewis, which backs the position of the association, Superior Court Judge. Also a single letter from the Alaska Native Province, which backs it, the Firefighters Association, and one from the Anchorage Crime Commission, which backs the Association's position. And I guess based on how many other panelists say it's that my entire home is a police officer, they become second class citizen. At the same rights as the man on the street, he or anybody else. I'll let you have that other question.
Any questions?
His letters of support and evidence we are receiving from the community addressing the bill, addressing the mission, I don't know if the support is still there and the bill should change.
I don't know if the support is still there. The thing was taken out was reflected in fall part. And we recognize most of this part of the state didn't have a very good vote. The last time we were here, things probably chief would have said, should be taken out the collective bargaining. Whereas this police department had that privilege of collective bargaining answer was not. So I did get
Is there someone, I wasn't curious, is someone here from the labor relations. Maybe I should ask him a question. I'm sort of startled by this because in 1964 I introduced a bill which became AS 2310037, which prohibits holograph or lie detector device requirements in each one except for the police situation. So the argument that this bill would create a special class is really wrong. It was, if you want to put it that way, my fault that the second class citizen thing got into the law 19 years ago. And what we're trying to do, work out is trying to remove that discrimination, not create discrimination. Other employees out there don't have to go through this.
If I might respond to your involved your own skipping good even in this bill, it still allows tests for new applicants for internal investigation for somebody's career as a client. It's not about the sole person.
We have Mr. Manelli here from the Department of Law, probably looking at the Department of Public Safety, just kind of have at least to bring up.
Mr. Lance, a little bit.
Aye.
Yeah.
good example is 1978. State Trooper Jimmy Little was fired based upon the premise of the polygraph examination. When he wanted arbitration, was thrown out. It's not recommended in court. We're going to hire him back with all the civil that was moving back to the state.
If the proceeding was more standardized in terms of criminal prosecution, in terms of the arguing admissible evidence, as opposed to inadmissible evidence, and doing the hard work of investigation that's done, if it's a non-policeman involved, then the result may be that the policeman is punished, and there's a greater public protection than Anchorage.
That's exactly.
And have there been cases where Anchorage policemen who have lost their jobs after they make a public protest have also been prosecuted criminally? Or is it the usual practice to just sever the connection of the
police? Yes, just sever the connection.
And the reputation of the force is supposed to be protected by the public as a normal order.
That's right.
If you look at the police officers that have been hassled, and citizens have been hassled, I don't think the police officers have been hassled any more than the percentage that the citizens had.
I'm only trying to make the point that for the officers point of view, this is not to protect wrongdoers, but to get the point where wrongdoers are prosecuted by getting it. This is what happens rather than the easy route.
There isn't anybody, I think, sitting at this table that thinks any more highly of law enforcement officers than I do.
You've got a lot of contact issues.
Yes, I have a lot of contact. You're on the right side of it. I must admit that you probably had more of contact on the other side.
Well, I have offended people who have accused me of wrong.
Unjust. And they're still right here from jail. There is a problem here that we're going to have to look at. It's one that I'm anxious to see what the Department of Law and also what the labor relations people have to say. You see what the Commissioner of Public Safety says, and certainly. I think that the chiefs of police are the most favorite opposed to it. Although I can understand why, in a way, and in certain small. And what you're telling me is that big departments, and I know some past chiefs of police in your department, and I can understand where there would be possibly some activity that wasn't acceptable to the norm. But if we could, Sergeant, I'm glad to listen. Maybe we get Mr. Cummings up here, or Karen. I won't try to pronounce it.
Andrew
Support. Andrew Support. All right. Whichever one of you are booking, if you like. We might be back to you again, sir. Thank you very much. Would you like to come and respond? Bruce, would you give your name and your affiliation with whatever testimony we got?
Thank you, Senator. I'm Bruce Cummings, Senior Negotiator of the Division of Labor Relations Department Administration. Senator, our position on the committee substitute is the same as on the original Senate Bill 115 last year, consistent with Commissioner Public Safety's comments. It is not a position that objects per se to any of the procedural aspects of the bill, but rather the philosophical argument that these are matters subject to collective bargaining. They are policies affecting employee working conditions. The parties of state agreements have, since the inception, recognized them as negotiable subjects and negotiated on a met length. Considering the merits of the position of parties in traditional quid pro quo sense, they agreed upon, at least for state employees, how we will conduct investigations that might result in punitive action. state, at least to pass a concurrence of the legislature, has taken the position that negotiated provisions have superseded the statute. Otherwise, it would be for the purpose of negotiations. However, since the parties have entered into agreements, when the legislature has seen fit to amend Title 39 and provide for changes in the employment relationship, they have been pretty religious about limiting those to employees not covered by a collective bargaining agreement. For example, the changes to the leave statute. To make it clear that those changes are only for those employees not subject to contract. And this bill, of course, does not do that.
What he's talking about is a basic bill of rights. This bill goes farther into the over and above basic bill of rights. And it has to do with pay and working conditions, which are part of the collective bargaining customers. So, otherwise,
unless I'm reading the wrong bill, it seems to be that as the majority of the bill of Congress, at least I don't think you can negotiate basic rights in a way like that.
Sure. I don't think there'd be
3.
All right, under Section 3, this would give a police officer essentially Fifth Amendment rights in a disciplinary proceeding. We don't believe that's proper. Right now, in an administrative proceeding, any employee can stand on a right to remain silent, but their silence in and of itself may force us to take action based on the facts we have before us. And here, this reads like we are conducting a criminal investigation and they're protecting themselves from criminal prosecution of Fifth Amendment rights, and we don't believe that that's proper.
I would imagine that's why you left the attorney there.
I don't know. The union representative.
I don't know what you're trying to do.
It doesn't seem to me that
if I ask you whether you had a vehicle out and checked out on it, you said, well, I might incriminate me. Well, that's incrimination as far as I'm concerned. You're going down the road.
We might have to do that. We would, if we know it's a disciplinary interview, we would want the employee's union representative present to advise and counsel the employee on how to respond.
Yes, so Mr. Chairman, looking at subsection 3, it seems to me that you're allowed to use a failure to respond against the officer, except if his answer might be self-incriminating again. I'm not an expert on the Fifth Amendment, but I think you might have, but the police officer might possibly already have such a right. It seems to me that if I'm being investigated, any questions may be self-incriminating. I can stand on my Fifth Amendment rights.
You can stand on your rights, not to say anything, but that doesn't mean you're not going after those. Fifth Amendment rights are in a criminal context. Again, this is the employer-employee relationship we're talking about here.
But I would find it hard for the administration if an officer would not answer a question in a punitive action, and he would not answer it and not incriminate himself, and you can prove, at least to your satisfaction, that he did take the vehicle. See? Then what? But then you have no testimony that says that he did it. It's only your word. Your thought against his, isn't it?
Mr. Chairman, what I think my problem with this is that if the investigator talking to the officer could say, I want you to answer the question and I hereby immunize you from any kind of criminal sanction and I demand that you answer, that would be one thing. But it seems to me like the investigator in the example we're talking about wants both ways. I want to be able to compel the answer lawyer, and then they want to be able to use the answer if it turns out to be criminal.
Well, why don't we change this? Let's see, it's under notice there, and maybe with his good graces, we could change the title of this and make it all state employees and give them all the same rights. Why not do it that way? Huh? Let's give all the state employees the same rights.
Well, I think that the polygraph issue, they do that.
Well, let's get them on the civil rights for all employees.
Mr. Chairman, I think that that section clearly states the law as it is in Alaska today. It says if you don't answer the question, you can have punitive action. Say you're charged with messing up the squad room. On the other hand, where you have someone's charged with stealing a vehicle or some action that constitutes a crime, that person can't be prosecuted by violating his Fifth Amendment rights. So what you have by forcing an answer would be to essentially eliminate the possibility of the prosecution of an officer for serious wrongdoing. And I think that there's a balance in that section where the person is disciplined, he doesn't answer, and that preserves the opportunity for the Department of War and the prosecution of the warrant.
If he doesn't answer, what are they going to do with him anyway? I would fire him too if he didn't answer.
You can do it under this
section,
Chairman.
I've said it down the road.
I agree with you, and you can do it under this section.
That's right. The way I read it. With right. Self-incriminating, he'd be protected from punitive action.
All right, let's go for it.
Parenthetically, right now, we know that there's both criminal and administrative investigations pending. It's very common for us to secure a statement with the concurrence of the prosecutor's office. squeeze me in a little bit. But
here, you better do it because it's a shell.
Yeah, there we will.
Okay.
Five. It implies that a transcript is always made. We don't in all cases.
Mr. Chairman, with the prime sponsor order, but on line 7, Senator, after the word 2 and before the word transcript, we became a full day.
How that works, Senator.
Mr. Chairman,
I'm
okay, I think that would take care of the problem as far as the education is required.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Sorry.
Number six, right now, when we take action that which presumably is conferred to the police officer, like a reprimand or whatever, put it in the employee's file, the contractual grievance procedure gives the employee a specified number of days to respond to that and file a grievance if the employee considers it inappropriate. This says that the employee has a chance has a 30-day period in which to respond before we take any action. If they want that, then we propose that they negotiate it through their union representatives.
Mr. Chairman,
may I point out that most police departments in the state are not represented to file an agency in any kind of collective bargaining procedure or are not unionized. And of course, that is the major precedent. There is nobody there except the office. That relates back to my earlier comment, Senator, that some of our concerns would immediately evaporate if this were written in such a manner as to exclude police officers who are in collective bargaining.
Mr. Chairman, if I may follow up with that point since you brought it up, is it true that all of these protections are now part of the state troopers? Yes or no?
In one form or another,
they're all subject to contract.
They're not necessarily identical to this, but the subject matter is all covered.
You don't mind if you answer more than yes or no, do you?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Jones.
Is the state trooper susceptible to the polygraph procedure?
Number 7. Right now, we have contractually agreed not to give them, that they may refuse to take a polygraph. Prior to that, the contract allowed us to take a polygraph. It's negotiable. Right now, we have agreed that they are not required to take it. In this contract, for all I know, it may come out that they are required to take it again, but that's between the parties.
By the way, I don't want you to infer from my attitude that I have an hostility toward you. I'm curious about what you say, because you say that the Department of Public Safety, through DON, has negotiated substantively to give troopers the rights that the bill requires. And then the Department of Public Safety comes and tells us that if the bill passes, it would, quote, effectively prevent successful investigations of peace officers who may engage in illegal activity. Why would they have...
You misunderstood me, Senator.
Okay.
We
you
have
can't explicitly answer what somebody else writes.
We have negotiated on the subject matter addressed in this bill. What we have negotiated is not in all cases the same as what is provided for in this bill. For example, they have no right to union representation, to an attorney.
Can we get back to 6?
I'll ask that question.
The provisions of the collective bargaining agreement are different than this bill. 6.
Anything wrong with 6, please?
Simply that under the contractual grievance procedure, that's the way we believe it should be. We take action if the employee files a grievance. We don't propose to take action, give the employee 30 days to respond, and we have to respond and so forth. It's contrary to accepted labor relations practices.
This is contrary to your contract?
Yes, it is.
Senator Rudy?
Right.
It's contrary to the contract now.
What period did you use for response?
Evaluations which would go on file. But normally something placed in an employee's file, they have 30 days. days after that date to file a grievance if they wish to contest it. That's provided for in Article 10, Section 3.
So rather than you don't accept it, the word response can be alluding to a grievance. Is that what you're saying?
This doesn't, we won't put it in file until we advise the employee that we're going to do so, and then they have 30 days in which to enter objections. And
we're going to see it in the confidential file, except the guy to put it in there.
Well, of course.
Mike, go on.
I can give a ludicrous example. So this would take literally if an incident happened today, you were subject to this bill, and it was a clear firing offense in the eyes of the state. Bear in mind, here we are talking about punitive employer actions. You wrecked a patrol car through negligence, and the facts aren't really in dispute. We would fire you, and that would immediately go into your personnel file, and your separation pay would be cut, and so forth. According to this, we couldn't put in your file that you had been fired for 30 days. We would have to notify you of what we proposed to put in your file, and then you'd have 30 days to contest it before anything happened in the way of entrance into your file. And then somehow, if you tell us that that you don't like it, we've got to attempt to promptly remove in all pertinent information determining that things are unfounded. I'm not really even sure what that means.
No, that, I think it was, excuse me, Senator, what this means is that once you the investigation found the police officer, the allegations made against the police officer unfounded, you will remove them from the personnel file.
That's what happens via the grievance procedure, Senator, if they're proven to be unfounded.
So why don't you just file agreements within 30 days?
Because not all departments are covered and have a grievance procedure, and the grievance procedures vary. What you have is that an officer may be accused of excessive force. And the next time that officer goes to court, the court subpoenas the records. They have an in-camera review, and that information that an officer has been accused of excessive force is given to
them. Why does it take 30 days to file this response? I don't understand it. If I was in a problem with somebody and they wrote something about me using it, I could answer it in 15 minutes probably.
Yes, that's fine.
And I'm sure a policeman would too at the same time.
It's a standard response time used in legal documents. If there is and there is nothing magic about 30 days. It could be 20 days, which is standard for answering a complaint in the courts of Alaska. If we needed to visit, we could talk that a better date.
Unless this delay is for 30 days.
It allows the police officer to perhaps consult with counsel. Being a counsel myself, I know it takes 30 days for many lawyers to come up with a recommendation. So I think it really allows them to consult.
Somebody to be direct, you mean?
No, to fashion an appropriate response. For some reason, lawyers are not particularly prompt. I still don't know why.
Well, that's true. District, maybe some investigation you want to do before giving counsel what the response would be.
On a punitive action?
Well, this isn't a murder investigation, fellas. This is the guy that did something wrong. That he was the guy that did it wrong. At least that's the inference. He was the one that was primarily the thing that happened. He was responsible for it. It isn't like three other guys down the street that you have to go make an investigation and try to find a witness to what three other fellas did. Everybody knows what he did.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to point out that, really police officers are in a little different position. And having been briefly a prosecutor and using police officers as witnesses, they're subject to a lot more cross-examination about them, their motives, their history, their reputation. And all this stuff goes in their file. And there have been cases in Anchorage where the police officer is the one that goes on trial. It's not the defendant. It's a police officer who's on trial. He's the guy that made the arrest.
This is a punitive action. This isn't a full-fledged criminal deal. It's just punitive action against the police officer himself. But that's for doing something administratively wrong, perhaps.
Mr. Chairman, it might be the precursor to criminal action, because we talk about excessive force. That excessive force complaint could well be the basis for either an assault or murder charge. So.
But then you go back to the first thing here, and says under criminal action, he's got all all the rights of everybody else.
Mr. Chairman, the point I was trying to make is that a police officer's file is a little different than the file of your secretary, because your secretary is not going to be called as a normal course of events as a witness in a criminal prosecution and have her credibility and her history and her employment record perhaps the issue in a criminal trial, which is not that unusual for police officers. So his, a police officer's file is a little different than any, than another person's file.
Yeah, but, he's got 10 days to file an answer, and if the allegations are unfounded, it comes out. There's no problem with that.
I don't know what the problem with that.
That's true.
With
a collective bargaining agreement. All I was trying to do was cut down to 30 days.
Well, if that's
all I was trying to do was cut down 30 days to something, 10 days maybe.
I have no objection. There's nothing magic about 30 days.
Well, I just think like it takes an excessively long time before they could come to some kind of determination on it.
The prime sponsor doesn't object to cutting it in half on the
15 days.
Seven should be a subject of negotiations. As I stated earlier, right now we contractually agreed not to require polygraphs in later negotiations. Anyone who may want to negotiate to require them. And your employees subject to collective bargaining activities. Options should remain to the parties.
You see, this is the if you mean this from just a layman's point of view, it says the police officer may not be compelled to submit to the polygraph examination, and the exercise of that right may not be used in any way to disadvantage the police officer. That's like saying, if he's guilty, you can't find out. I mean, that's the inference that's drawn right there. If he's guilty...
Last year, it's been a great time in state affairs. The present emergency, which you see before us, avoided the state affairs, including the emergency, which I have the original. Significant departure from the original bill. It's even though it's to the watered down version, it's too much worthy of consideration. The intent of the bill was to give the police officers in departments around the state of Alaska the same constitutional rights as are enjoyed by other citizens of Alaska. There were a number of portions that were objected to by the chiefs of police as being items more suitable for contract negotiations. All of those items, as far as I'm aware, have been removed by the State Affairs Committee from the bill. The items that are in the bill that you have before you, State Affairs Committee substitute, deal primarily with the rights of an officer within the department have been pared down. Rather than taking any more of I'd be happy to answer any questions, rather than taking more of your time, perhaps the other two individuals are here on behalf of the Police Officers Association. Perhaps we can provide some background.
Senator, we have opposition from both the Department of Administration and the Department of Public Safety. This legislation into the area of employer-employee relations, thereby bypassing the collective bargaining process. Labor relations is a managing function which includes internal investigations and the central administrative concern which might be addressed in the management of the bargaining structure.
If I ask, Mr. Chairman, what's the date of that letter?
February 2nd, 1984.
Yeah. It's most important to the Department this evening to provide you with half letters. Prime sponsor, I'm sure, which will recite that part. If there's someone from the department here that wishes to state their objections, the labor management items, in my opinion, have been removed from the bill by the previous committee. Perhaps the department's in error.
I think Mr. Cummings is here for labor relations. But he might be able to help us.
I'll let that other witness proceed.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Senator.
to that point, we have several arbitrations based on violations of rights and contracts. We won about 95%. That's because, in my opinion, that the administration has nothing to do. We can get a package there and we can get a copy of it. It's the 11th. So Judge Lewis, which backs the position of the association, Superior Court Judge.
Thank you.
is Mr. in the committee says to me, if you look at page 2, line 7, it says the police officer may not be compelled to submit to a polygraph examination. I don't know. Page 2, line 7, the police officer may not be compelled to submit to a polygraph examination. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, we find that in terms of someone being screened for, because a person being screened is not a police officer, that section would apply, that section also applies to the investigation.
So there's investigation, the conduct of the police officer subject to punitive action.
It goes all the way down. Section 1, section 3, or page 3, Mr. Chairman, section 2.
Well, I have many people who have been accused of fraud.
Yes, sir.
you still have to hear from jail.
There is a problem here that we're going to have to look at, and it's one that I'm anxious to see what the Department of Law and also what the Labor Relations people have to say. You've seen what the Commissioner of Public Safety says, and certainly I think that the Chiefs of Police and the Speaker opposed it, although I can understand why in a way, and in certain small families. What you're telling me is some of the big departments, and I know some of them. As Chiefs of Police in your department, and I can understand where there would be possibly some activity that wasn't acceptable to the department. But if we couldn't, Sergeant, go ahead and listen. Maybe we can get Mr. Cummings or Karen, I won't try to pronounce it.
Van Dusselberg.
Whichever one of your book, if you like. We might be back to you again, sir. Thank you very much. Both of you like to cover this one? Bruce, would you give your name and your affiliation with whatever testimony will be your own?
Thank you, Senator. I'm Bruce Cummings, Senior Negotiator of the Division of Labor Relations Department of Administration. Senator, our position on the committee substitute is the same as on the original Senate Bill 115 last year. Safety's comments. It is not a position that objects per se to any of the procedural aspects of the bill, but the philosophical argument that these are matters subject to collective bargaining. They are policies affecting employee working conditions. The parties and state agreements have, since the inception, recognized them as legitimate subjects who have negotiated on them at length. Considered the merits of the decision of parties and traditional controls, both satisfied and agreed upon at least proceeding the place for how we will conduct investigations that might result in punitive action. We continue to do so. We're in negotiations, of course, right now with the Public Safety and Police Association. Last year, we negotiated amendments to their contract under Article 7. That's the way it should remain. The parties should be at liberty to agree between themselves as to what are the proper procedural rights for bargaining here.
Go ahead, Senator. Am I hearing you correctly to say that if you don't object to anything in the bill, that you object to the principle of the bill?
I'll qualify by saying that. There may be objections to specific things, but I don't necessarily want to get into subparagraph by subparagraph, Mr. Chairman. There may be members of this committee who do not agree with your objection of principle. You may want to overlook that. Substantive provisions in the objective. And if you do not that, I think this is what you get, Senator. To Section 545.
That's for substantive principle.
Please.
I really find this kind of strange because under the Title 39 for the officers and employees, there are lots of things that we put in that by statute which affect the employment relations of public employees. I mean, just at random, I'm finding that no person may require an assessment, subscription, contribution, or service for political party from an employee who classified that service. They don't say that the employee should have to bargain about whether they could be immune from demands of that category, which would be reasonable or unethical from a supervisor. So I'm really not sure what, if I follow your position to a logical outcome, and correct me if I'm wrong, you want to repeal all these things about statutes.
Senator, let's just let the man answer up his legal problems that he has with it, and I'm going to something else.
No, I'm asking you, Mr. Chairman, whether this is something, whether this is unique in affecting the collective bargaining situation, or whether we don't already put around
other purpose to negotiations. However, since the parties have entered into agreements when the legislature has seen fit to amend Title 39 to provide for changes in the employment relationship, they've been pretty religious about limiting those to employees not covered by a collective bargaining agreement, for example, the changes to the leave statute, to make it clear that those changes are only for those employees not subject to contract. And this bill, of course, does not do that.
What he's talking about is a basic bill of rights. This bill goes farther into the over and above basic bill of rights. And it has to do with pay and working conditions, which are arguable.
Being abusive to his business and getting back at you.
prosecution.
We have an attorney. We don't have an attorney.
Okay. All I'll say, Senator, is that we go to great pains to distinguish whenever possible. And if I, as an employee, embezzle from the state, two things can happen to me. My employer can fire me based on my employer's findings, and the Department of Law can prosecute me and attempt to send me to jail. And they are two different processes. I have two different sets of rights.
But you might have to, you might get into exclusion. And under that, the attorney says that you didn't sit there and you didn't go all the way with it.
Well, that's right, Mr. Chairman. You can be fired for things that you can't be prosecuted for. Yeah. Evidence of firing can be admitted and it won't go in the court of law.
That's correct.
Two different standards.
Okay. We know what I believe we have a consensus in the committee. I think on this. One to three.
All right. Under Section 3, this would give a police officer essentially Fifth Amendment rights in a disciplinary proceeding. We don't believe that's proper. Right now, in an administrative proceeding, any employee can stand on a right to remain silent. But their silence, in and of itself, may force us to take action based on the facts we have before us. And here, this reads like we are conducting a criminal investigation and they're protecting themselves from criminal prosecution for Fifth Amendment rights, and we don't believe that that's proper.
I would imagine that's why you want the attorney
there. The union representative.
What you're trying to do. It doesn't seem to me that if I ask you whether you had a vehicle out to go ahead and check out on it, you said, well, it might incriminate me. Well, that's incrimination as far as I'm concerned. You're going down the road.
We might have to do that. We would, if we know it's a disciplinary interview, we would want the employee's union representative present to advise and counsel the employee on how to respond.
Mr. Chairman, looking at subsection 3, it seems to me that you're allowed to use a failure to respond against the officer, except if his answer might be self-remaining. I'm not an expert on the Fifth Amendment, but I think you might have to. This officer might possibly already have such a right. It seems to me that if I'm being investigated and the questions may be self-incriminating, I can stand on my Fifth Amendment rights.
Well, you can stand on your rights, not to say anything, but that doesn't mean that I'm going on the road. Fifth Amendment rights are in criminal context. Again, this is the employer-employee relationship we're talking about here.
But I would find it hard for the administration if an officer would not answer a question in a punitive action, he would not answer it and not incriminate himself. And you can prove, at least to your satisfaction, that he did take the vehicle.
See,
then what? But then you have no testimony that says that he did it, and it's only your thought against his.
Change this, and maybe, well, let's see, it's a Senator Moody's there, and maybe with his good graces, we can change the title of this and make it all state employees and give them all the same rights.
Why not do it that way?
Huh?
Let's give all the state employees the same rights.
Well, I think the paragraph issue they do that.
Well, let's give them a civil rights for all employees.
I think that section currently states the law as it is in Alaska today. It says if you don't answer the question, you can have punitive action. Say you're charged with messing up the squad room. On the other hand, where you have someone's charged with stealing the vehicle or some action that constitutes a crime, that person can't be prosecuted to violate his Fifth Amendment rights. So what you have by forcing an answer would be essentially eliminate the possibility of the prosecution of an officer for serious wrongdoing. And I think that there's a better
that section for personal discipline. He doesn't answer it. And that preserves the opportunity for the Department of Board for prosecution of his warrant.
If he doesn't answer, he doesn't answer, but they're going to do it anyway.
They will fire.
I would fire him if he didn't answer.
You can do that under this
it's fairly clear.
I agree with you, and you can do that in this section. That's the way I read it.
With right. Self-incriminating, he'd be protected from punitive action.
All right, let's go for it.
Parenthetically, right now, if we know that there's both criminal and administrative investigations pending, it's very common for us to secure a statement with the concurrence of the prosecutor's office that advises the employee that statements made during the course of the administrative investigation will not be used for purposes of criminal prosecution. Section 4, that's a permissive section as far as whether or not to tape the report or tape the session. We don't really have any problem with that, although we can quibble about whether or not we have to provide a tape.
If you're going to use the tape in any manner, and you're going to actually better make it available.
We generally do. Right. We just like squeeze the unit a little bit.
Here you better do it because it's a shall.
Yeah, there we will.
Okay.
Five, it applies that a transcript is always made. We don't in all cases.
Mr. Chairman, I'm with the prime sponsor board that put on line 7, Senator. After the word 2 and the 4 word transcript, we put A with A.
That's my favorite, Senator.
Okay, I think that would take care of the problem as far as the implications required. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Number six,
right now, when we take action that, which presumably is the first as a police officer, like a reprimand or whatever, put in the employee's file. The contractual grievance procedure gives the employee a specified number of days to respond to that filed grievance if the employee considers it inappropriate. This says that the employee has a chance has a 30-day period in which to respond before we take any action. If they want that, then we can propose that they negotiate it through their union representatives.
May I point out that most police departments in the state are not represented by an agency of state and collective bargains or not unionized. And of course, that is the convention process. There is money there. Except accounts.
That relates back to my earlier comments, Senator, that some of our concerns would immediately evaporate if this were written in such a manner as to exclude police officers who are in collective bargaining.
Mr. Chairman, if I may follow up with that point since you brought it up, is it true that all of these protections are now by the state troopers? Yes or no?
In one form or another, they're all subject to
contract.
They're not necessarily identical to this, but the subject matter is all covered with this.
You don't mind if he answers more than yes or no?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman.
That's
a good joke. Jesse, is the state trooper susceptible to the polygraph procedure?
Number 7. Right now, we have contractually agreed not to give them, that they may refuse to take a polygraph. Prior to that, the contract allowed us to take a polygraph. It's negotiable. Right now, we've agreed that they are required to take it. In this contract, for all I know, it may come out that they are required to take it again, but that's between the parties.
By the way, I don't want you to infer from my attitude that I don't ask for you towards you. I'm curious about what you say, because you say that the Department of Public Safety, through DOA, has negotiated substantively to give troopers the rights that the bill requires. And then the Department of Public Safety comes and tells us that the bill passes. It would, quote, effectively prevent successful investigations of peace officers who may engage in illegal activity. Now, why would they have...
You misunderstood me, sir.
We have negotiated... Can you answer what somebody else writes?
Yeah. We have negotiated on the subject matter addressed in this bill. What we have negotiated is not in all cases the same as what is provided for in this bill. But for example, they have no right to union representation, I mean to an attorney.
But to get back to the 6.
I'll ask that question, Mr. Manasseh.
The provisions of the collective bargaining agreement are different from this bill.
6. Anything wrong with 6, Bruce?
Simply that under the contractual agreements procedure, it's the way we believe it should be. We take action if the employee files agreements. We don't propose to take action, give the employee 30 days to respond, and we have to respond and so forth. It's contrary to accepted labor relations practices.
This is contrary to your contract?
Yes, it is.
Senator Rohde? Contract. It's contrary to the contract now.
What period do you use for response?
Response could be alluding to agreements. Is that what you're saying?
This says that we won't put it in a file until we advise the employee that we're going to do so, and then they have 30 days in which to enter objections. And
then we're going to see it as a confidential file, except the guy that put it in there.
Well, of course.
If I can call him, pardon.
Yes, sir.
Right. Right.
If I can give a ludicrous example, so just to take it literally, if an incident happened today, subject to this bill, and it was a clear firing offense in the eyes of the state. Bear in mind here, we are talking about punitive employer actions. You wrecked a patrol car through negligence, and the facts aren't really in dispute. We would fire you, and that would immediately go into your personnel file, and your separation pay would be cut, and so forth. According to this, we couldn't put in your file that you had been fired for 30 days. We would have to notify you of what we proposed to put in your file, and then you'd have 30 days to contest it before anything happened in the way of entrance into your file. And then somehow, if you tell us that that you don't like it, we've got to attempt to promptly remove in all pertinent information, determining that things are unfounded. I'm not really even sure what that means.
No, thank you. Excuse me, Senator. What this means is that once you've completed the investigation, found this officer, the allegations made against the police officer are unfounded, you will remove them from the personnel.
That's what happens via the grievance procedure, Senator, if they're proven to be unfounded.
Well, why don't you just file agreements within 30 days?
Because not all departments are covered and have a grievance procedure. The grievance procedures vary. What you have is that an officer may be accused of excessive force, and the next time that officer goes to court, the court subpoenas the records. They have an in-camera review, and that information that officers have been accused of excessive force is given to
them. Why does it take 30 days to file this response? I don't understand it. If I was in a problem with somebody and they wrote something about me using it, I could answer in 15 minutes probably. I'm sure a policeman would do it at the same time.
It's a standard response time used in legal documents if there is there is nothing magic about 30 days. It could be 20 days, which is standard for answering a complaint in the courts of Alaska. If you need to bump that better day.
The policy does just delay for 30 days.
It allows the police officer to perhaps consult with counsel, being counsel myself. I know it takes 30 days for many lawyers to come up with a recommendation. So I think this really allows them to consult.
Somebody need to wrap you.
No, for him to fashion an appropriate response. For some reason, lawyers are not particularly proud of that. I still don't know why.
Well, that's true. In addition to me, there is an investigation you want to do before giving counsel, I don't like the response of
an impunitive action.
Well, it's a civil murder investigation, fellas. This is the guy that did something wrong. He was the guy that did it wrong. At least that's the inference. He was the one that was primarily the thing that happened. He
there have been cases in Anchorage where the police officer is the one that goes on trial. It's not the defendant. It's the police officer who's on trial. He's the guy that made the arrest.
This isn't a full-fledged criminal deal. It's just punitive action against the violence officer himself.
But that's
we're doing something administratively wrong, perhaps.
Mr. Chairman, it might be the precursor to criminal action, because we're talking about excessive force. That excessive force complaint could well be the basis for either an assault or murder charge. So,
but then you go back to the first thing here and says under criminal action, he's got all the rights of everybody else.
Mr. Chairman, the point I was trying to make is that a police officer's file is a little different than the file of your secretary, because your secretary is not going to be called as a normal course of events as a witness in a criminal prosecution and have her credibility and her history and her employment record perhaps the issue in a criminal trial, which is not that unusual for police officers. So a police officer's file is a little different than another person's file.
But this is he's only got, he's got 10 days to file an answer that the allegations are unfounded that comes out. There's no problem with that.
I don't know what that's wrong with that. That's true because it's a collective bargaining agreement.
All I was trying to do was cut down to 30 days. So,
well, if that's
all I was trying to do was cut down 30 days to something, 10 days maybe.
I have no objection. There's nothing magic about 30 days.
No, it just seems like it takes an excessively long time before they can come to some kind of determination on it. So,
the prime sponsor doesn't object to cutting this half on the thing. Yeah, 15 days.
Find out. I mean, that's the inference and drawn right there. If he's guilty,